This is the Early Edition Podcast with Phil Johnson on AM1150.ca and across the Bell Talk Radio Network.
Well, good morning. Welcome to the Early Edition, Monday, May the 11th. On the back of Great Mother's Day Sunday. This is across Canada. It is National Nurses Day, kicking off Nurses Week right across the country. As we all continue to appreciate and recognize the place that nurses hold in the medical scheme of things. This year, the watchwords are compassion, expertise, and trust for Nursing Week of 2020. And it's a pleasure to welcome Christine Sorensen, who's the president of the BCNU, to join us for a couple of moments this morning. Good morning and welcome. So appreciate your time and appreciate you being here.
Thank you. Thank you. Glad to be here with you. Good morning.
If I could throw something out to you, I flash back to 9/11. And on the back of 9/11, the heroes of the moment, the heroes of the time were firemen. And we all know that recruitment at fire halls skyrocketed as young boys and young men decided that they wanted to be firemen. And I'm going to venture and suggest to you that what's going on right now has elevated nurses such that I think you're going to see an unbelievable number of people deciding, young women in particular, but men as well, deciding they want to be nurses. Am I anywhere?
Well, I certainly hope so. We are in a worldwide nursing shortage as we speak. So there is some irony that the International Council of Nursing picked 2020 as their year to highlight the need for nurses around the world. And we in this province know that we need 25,000 more nurses by the year 2030. So I would hope that there are people that are interested in becoming nurses in the variety of roles that nurses play and have played throughout this pandemic.
And are we any closer to making nurses or empowering nurses such that a nurse can work with a consulting doctor and then he disappears down the hall and she effectively manages the case? I don't know if we use the word nurse practitioners, although I know that's a term. But are nurses rising with abilities, I guess, or responsibilities?
Absolutely. Nurses have always risen, and we go all the way back to 200 years ago, Florence Nightingale's birthday, and where, you know, she rose at that time to identify the science of nursing and the need to study and do epidemiology and so much of what we're doing now, studying the science of viruses and bacteria and how they transmit. But we've seen during this pandemic, nurses who are working in teams, we've always done teamwork, but we all have our unique individual roles to play. And when patients come into the hospital, it's the nurse that they see 24 hours a day. Many other healthcare practitioners who are such important parts of the team are not there 24 hours a day, but the nurses are 24/7 there with the patient, holding their hand, making sure they get the care they need.
Can we talk about the current circumstance that we're within, though? Because I have seen so many stories of, you know, television has done a great job of taking us face to face with nurses. I've seen the face mask pulled down and seen the bridge of their nose rubbed raw with the hours that they've worn, the fears that their personal protection equipment, PPE. We've all discovered a whole new language, you know, including PPE, that there's not enough, or nurses are having to use the same mask 2-3 days in a row. Have we gotten past this, or have we lessened those fears? Are we giving those nursing teams what they need?
Absolutely not, in the sense that we haven't got past this at all. As Dr. Bonnie Henry said, she had hoped we might be at the end of the beginning. But what we are seeing worldwide is that our colleagues are facing increasing numbers of people testing positive again. Those long hours of nurses working long hours with face masks on, donning full PPE, exhausted at the end of their shift, continue to happen around the world. And we'll see waves and waves of this. And so, you know, I think it is still a challenging time for us. We have been, I would say, somewhat lucky in this province. We still have had a significant number of deaths, and our hearts go out to those families. but we've been lucky in this province, and perhaps we don't understand the full damage that this virus has done to our nursing colleagues in other parts of the world, whether it's Wuhan or Italy or Iran or the UK, or even closer to home in the United States, where we see the serious impact of numerous deaths, and including nurses.
Yeah, I'm with you 100% at all of which you've just put in front of us this morning. And I think that the tragedy is, and again, I've seen interviews with nurses who say, "I'm afraid to go home." The people at Accent Inns, Mandy Farmer, has donated rooms at her hotels, making them available to medical teams who are afraid to go home because they're afraid that they're going to infect their families. Nurses, a story of a doctor crawling in a basement window and going into a basement bedroom and showering downstairs because he doesn't want to be near his family. As I said all that in front of you, I can't believe that that's where we are in this world right now, but it's very accurate, I think, is it not?
Absolutely. It's very accurate. And as I said, 2020, who would have ever thought the hindsight of this year to realize and focus that nursing would be such an important part of the healthcare system. In this province, we know that over 400 healthcare workers have already been infected with this disease. Thankfully, we've had no deaths. We did have one dentist who passed away, which was very tragic, but we've had no deaths in the rest of the healthcare community. But nurses and other healthcare practitioners every day are going into the healthcare system, doing their best for their patients, making sure they're there to provide care, but at the same time, very concerned about their own health. You've talked about the lack of PPE, or certainly the significant shortages or difficulty accessing appropriate PPE, and nurses putting their lives on the risk every day, and then coming home and wanting so desperately not to infect their community or their families, and going to really extensive measures to make sure that doesn't happen. Nurses do work with infectious disease every day, not just COVID, and we are very good at making sure that we don't spread these infectious diseases to the community. But I think with so much awareness right now around COVID, we're particularly worried about what that will do to our own health and the health of our communities and families.
In conversation with Christine Sorensen, she's the president of the BCNU, the BC Nurses Union. You mentioned a number of, I think you said 4,000, that we're going to, have a shortfall, if you will. I know that at Kelowna General here, we have a nursing school that every chair within it is filled. I think that Okanagan College is expanding its program. But how do we train? How do we find places to train the demand that's going to be on the system in the months and years to come?
Well, it's a very good question. The government's own data told us before COVID that we needed 25,000 more nurses by the year 2030. That's on top of the 40% of us that can also retire in the next 10 years. So we need a lot of new nurses, but we do know that right now we're only graduating about 1,500 in this province, so the math doesn't add up. We do have to talk to the provincial government, particularly the Ministry for Advanced Education, to look at how we can expand nursing education, knowing that also nursing educators are also an aging workforce and are having difficulty recruiting and retaining nursing educators, also a critically important part of our healthcare system. And so we do need to reach out and talk to our provincial government on how they will increase nursing seats. We know that in your own college, university right there, they have a wait list every year for nurses, young people who want to get into nursing and become nurses. And that breaks my heart, because I think there are lots of people who would be great nurses if we only gave them the opportunity.
Well, I'm hoping that the awareness that we're all gaining, both from a governmental point of view and from a societal point of view, that maybe society can push on Premier Horgan and subsequent governments to say, you've got to expand this. I think the trades are great, and we need guys that can hammer nails and wire homes and so on and so forth. But we don't have people that can handle the wiring that's in the inside of each and every one of us. We've got a serious problem, don't we?
Well, it's interesting, because nursing has always been an art and a science. And I've always said it's similar to the trades, because the trades often talk about STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math. That's everything that nurses do every day. But we throw in the letter A, for steam, because we've got to have a lot of steam and energy, but it's the art of nursing that we do. And so, yes, there's a lot of focus on the trades, but really nursing is an equivalent kind of profession. And in our profession, we do see both men and women, as do the trades. And I think we have to open up our minds to making sure that we put the proper emphasis, as we've seen, on all of those essential services, of which nursing is so critical to healthcare. We really are the backbone of the healthcare system and desperately needed.
No question. Before we say goodbye, I need to ask you, I am looking right now at a piece of art that is hanging in a hospital in Southam in England, and it was done by Banksy, and it shows a little boy with a basket, a sort of like a wastebasket beside him, and nestled in the wastebasket is a Batman figurine and a Superman figurine, and the little boy on his knees is playing with a nurse that is dressed in the nursing doll that is in the colors of a British nurse. Have you seen that piece of art?
I have. It's called Painting for Saints. It's a lovely piece of art, and he donated it to the hospital in honor of the nurses, many nurses and many healthcare professionals in the UK who died as a result of COVID.
Well, you know what that is to me a representation of tomorrow.
Yeah, absolutely. And what I love the most about it is it's not a little girl holding a doll. It's a little boy who is looking to this nurse as a hero, a healthcare hero, and perhaps his future profession, saying, you know, I too can be a nurse. I can be in there caring for the people of the future and making sure that they live good, healthy, long lives.
Christine Sorensen, such a pleasure to meet you this morning.
Absolutely wonderful chatting with you this morning on the first day of National Nurses Week.
Pleasure. You have yourself a great day. Christine Sorensen is the president of the BCNU, the BC Nurses Union. If you haven't seen the picture, I suggest you go to Google and type in Banksy, B-A-N-K-S-Y, Banksy. That's all you will have to do. Have a look at this picture.
This is the Early Edition Podcast with Phil Johnson on AM1150.ca and across the Bell Talk Radio Network.
Skies, exactly as forecast by myself and Ted, are clearing. High-flying clouds being moved out of the valley. You're going to predominantly a sunny day today. It's not going to be quite as nice as it was yesterday for Mother's Day. What a truly, truly spectacular day it was. And hopefully you had a chance to get out. Well, no, a lot of people did get out. I've seen pictures from the Lower Mainland, beaches and parks filled to overflowing, and the whole concept of physical distancing or social distancing would appear, based on the pictures and the photographic evidence, to be a phrase that in the minds of a whole lot of people is a nice thing to talk about but has no connection to reality whatsoever. Same situation here in the Okanagan. Beaches filled, parks filled, as everybody got out to try to spend some time in the sunshine. Kim Froom joins us for a couple of moments from Active Lifestyle Consulting. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Phil. Yes, it certainly was a spectacular weekend, and I was fortunate enough to get out on the bike both days. It is easy to socially distance on a bicycle, that's for sure. So, but I did see a lot of people both on the water and in the land enjoying the sunshine, which is fantastic. We want them to do that. But I thought it was kind of timely that we might talk a little bit about protection from the UV rays as we all pour outside, you know, looking to enjoy some activities outside. A reminder to people that, you know, it's best to, part of me ensuring people stay healthy and fit is also in protection when you're doing your outdoor activities.
Well, it's certainly what you're suggesting juxtaposes exactly with last week, which was Melanoma Week. And we had some time in conversation with Karen Hill, who had a plan of creating mole patrols and locating at beaches and golf courses where everybody is getting subjected to significant amounts of sun and thereby the potential for melanoma, a word that still a lot of people of us choose to ignore, but increasingly we do so at the very risk of our very lives.
Well, certainly skin cancer is one of the most common types of cancer that we can acquire, particularly those of us that are outdoor enthusiasts. So, you know, there's some general tips, and if you get onto the Health Canada website, there's some great advice for both parents and individuals when it comes to sun safety. And certainly, you know, a timely reminder right now about things like ensuring that you wear sunscreen and reapply your sunscreen, particularly if you're someone who has, perhaps you're a construction worker, perhaps you're a landscaper, you're outdoors on a regular basis, it's good for you to ensure that you've got that and you're reapplying it. And just keeping an idea of where to look for UV rays, et cetera, you know, to know what the UV index is. We, again, have good websites for that information to be available to you. But and washing your water, it's interesting to me that when people are working long hours in the garden, et cetera, that they forget, or, you know, they're distracted and they forget to keep that water content up, because, of course, often when we're thirsty, the situation is too late. So just a reminder for people to keep those tips, especially as we head outdoors.
We don't think of gardening as being something that that causes you to lose your hydration and effectively almost put yourself at risk because of sunstroke. It's one thing when you're out on a bicycle and you've got those two water bottles that are in the racks or the hangers down below, or even if you're out jogging or out running, you know that that you're going to sweat significantly, and so you keep hydration at the front of your mind, top of mind. You somehow don't keep hydration front of mind, top of mind when you're planting posies in the strip of soil at the side of your driveway.
No, and I think that's a timely reminder right now, as many of us are spending more time outdoors in our gardens and our flower pots, et cetera. They've made some great advances in UV protective clothing too, Phil. So light, really light weight material for UV rays for shirts and hats and so on and so forth, because a lot of people don't want to wear that kind of covering because, of course, it's warm. And then thinking about when the time of day is that you're outside. You know, typically in Canada, between 11 and 3 in the afternoon is when that UV is at its highest. So just planning a little bit. You know, we spend great time planning our gardens and pots and what we want to put in them and what it's going to look like. So just adding to your own preventative health issues by making sure that you're getting out there before those times or after those times so that you're not exposed to the higher UV rate rating. But I think the biggest thing is just that, because we're heading into the spring and summer and, you know, the weather's better and everybody's outside, just take a little time to you know, prepare yourself as you head out for whatever outdoor activities, because in the long run, it's going to prevent cancer and it's going to protect you from those UV rays.
Well, Kim, I couldn't have said it better for myself. Have you seen any tests of the UV protective clothing? Is it effective, or is sunscreen still your number one choice?
Most of the professionals will tell you to start with your sunscreen. There has been some great material coming out, particularly in the area of cycling and also construction work, of course, because they're exposed for long durations. And if you're out cycling for long durations, obviously your exposure is going to be higher. Head on to the Health Canada website. They do have some great recommendations there, Phil. And I would encourage your listeners to use those credible websites to make sure that the information has got some scientific research base to it. But, you know, Mom was right when she sent us out the door. Make sure you've got your water, your sunscreen, and your hat, and you should be good to go.
Yes, Mom. Kim Froome, who in another lifetime is the coach to many of us, but also every once in a while can take on the mom role for so many people. If you're spending time in the out-of-doors, make sure that you put sunscreen on. You can reach Kim Froome at activelifestylesconsulting@gmail.com. One word, activelifestylesconsulting@gmail.com. If you need to reach Kim Froome, that is where you will find her.
This is the Early Edition Podcast with Phil Johnson on AM1150.ca and across the Bell Talk Radio Network.
Well, good morning. Welcome to the Early Edition on this Monday, the 11th after Mother's Day weekend. Hope you had a chance to talk to your mom, or even in your heart and your soul, communicate with your mom on a spiritual level. Time now to conduct or have another business shout-out as we spend time talking with businesses in the Valley. talking to them about the impact of COVID-19, how they're adjusting, how they're adapting. Blair Huzak is the owner of Blair Mechanical Services. They deal in plumbing, heating, and cooling. Blair, good morning to you. I appreciate you being here this morning.
No problem, Phil. Good to speak with you.
Likewise. So I have to start out. I mean, clearly, Blair Plumbing, Heating, and Cooling is you. How long have you been doing this?
Yeah, great question. This is our 27th year, Phil, coming from the Lower Mainland area to the Pole of the Okanagan. So, yeah, we started, I think, August 30th will be 27 years.
And how did you arrive in the Valley? Were you a one truck with a partner kind of guy? Or you know, how does that all start? Because clearly you've become a powerful force here in the Valley.
Yeah, well, it came with virtually, yes, exactly that, one truck. We, my wife and I, and two small children at the time, 2 and 4, decided to make the move and did not know one person here. And just started out by knocking on doors and just building it from there.
And today, what does Blair Plumbing and Heating look like?
There's about 20 of us, including the office staff, and we you know, keep growing every year. We're adding a couple people a year or more. So, you know, we're certainly thankful in that fact.
How has COVID-19 changed how you're doing business?
Yeah. For instance, our service meetings are now in Ben Lee Park, you know, spread apart and holding them in the park. Thankfully, the weather.
In the skateboard park?
What's that?
In the skateboard park?
Yes, off to the side in the parking lot. We gather all our trucks in the parking lot at that time. It's usually around 7 a.m. in the morning. And about once a week we're out there and, you know, we still need to communicate. Yes, we could do it over the phone, but sometimes face-to-face and, you know, explaining and seeing each other is helpful also.
Primarily residential, or are you commercial as well?
Yeah, a little bit of both for sure. And we're, you know, residential, residential single-family homes are our main customers for sure. But we have other clients that are on the commercial side on the plumbing. We are not involved in the construction at all, so it's when those emergencies happen or you need an in-furnace air conditioning. Those vital services, for instance, one of the jobs this morning is going to be providing a new water line to a home that's been without water for a few days. So some of those essential services for sure.
And let's face it, we all have had that moment in time when the heating system has gone down and it's 32, then it's 28, then it's 17, then it's heading towards zero. And I got to make an emergency call to you to come and get her done.
Yeah, exactly right. And that's you know, the thrust of our business is exactly those calls and preventative maintenance and, you know, planning ahead a little bit for people also. So we don't always get ourselves into those situations.
How has your business changed relative to interfacing with your customers, going into their homes, meeting with people who are all in a panic because whether it's a sink or a line that's broken and there's water all over my kitchen floor, or it's a furnace that won't turn on because the thermostat is thrashed, or how has your connection with your clients changed?
Well, certainly it starts with that first phone call into our office, and that's our first screening process from there. We'll ask some vital questions, and you know, those questions have changed a little bit for sure since from 2 months out. A lot of times the customers will dictate to us how they want things to look. Some people are postponing. Some people are saying, you know, come on in, we're fine, we'll keep our distance. You're welcome to work on our home, you know, for the call or all day. Some of our jobs are 1 to 2 days. So, and many of them are in the basement or crawl spaces. So we're kind of away from the customer a lot of the time anyways. But they'll dictate to us how they want that call to go.
Blair Huzak, quick snapshot of your business, your time at Blair Mechanical Services. I can't thank you enough. Incredible to think what's happened in the intervening years, over 27 years since you first came to the Valley.
Yeah, exactly, Phil. It's changed greatly population-wise, infrastructure, and just the good positive influence of Kelowna and all the entrepreneurs that are in this town and you know, all the good customers of ours for sure.
Blair Huzak from Blair Plumbing, Heating, and Cooling. 27 years ago, he and his wife moved to the Valley with two young kids. today a significant player in the business of looking after your home. Good people to know. Good people to talk to.
This is the Early Edition Podcast with Phil Johnson on AM1150.ca and across the Bell Talk Radio Network.
Good morning. Welcome to the Early Edition, May the 11th after Mother's Day. Hope you had a chance to at least some way, in some way, shape, or form, connect with your mom, your mother, to give thanks, and whether maybe it was just in your own memory, because for a whole lot of people, mothers are dearly departed, but you still hold them close to your heart. Today is National Nurses Day. We're kicking off National Nurses Week. As I've said a couple of times this morning, recognizing what they do, the place that nurses hold in the medical health scheme of things. These days, nurses have never been so important. And all of us have an understanding of just the work that they do. And commitment beyond anything, because the reality is that some nurses have given their very lives in the commitment to looking after the health of all of us. Time now to connect with Ken Peacock. He is the chief economist for the BC Business Council. Has been spending some time looking at the numbers, weighing, and taking a look at historical references and so on, and basically talking about how COVID-19 has landed like a ton of bricks on the province of BC. Mr. Peacock, good morning to you. I appreciate you being here.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Good morning.
So, listen, I'm looking at some of the numbers here, and something that really strikes me, it was in February, and you were measuring unemployment at 5%, which was an okay number for this province. 2 months later, in April, it was 11.5%. 400,000 jobs lost over that two-month period. For someone who does what you do, this will be the point in time, the moment in time you will carry with you for the rest of your life, I'm presuming.
You are absolutely right. It will be something that I remember for the rest of my life. And the numbers you were just speaking of kind of reflect just how unprecedented this is. Just to give your listeners a little brief recap, in March, we saw jobs go down by 132,000. And that survey was conducted kind of in the third week of March. And so that was kind of just as the lockdown was getting underway. So we thought April was going to be even more catastrophic. And sure enough, it was 264,000 jobs disappeared in April, a doubling of the March number. And then, as you said at the outset, roughly 400,000 jobs disappear in two short months. An incredible number. And I've sort of taken to measuring those losses because they're so hard to wrap your head around in terms of years of job growth. And to get back to the level where we currently sit after those 2 months of job growth, we have to go all the way back to 2006. So where we sit right now, we've seen 14 years of job growth destroyed or eroded in this province. Now, some of those will come back.
I have to jump in here.
Yeah, sure.
I'm struck by the words that you've just uttered, that in the space of 2 months, COVID-19 has wiped out 14 years of progress and growth in the province of BC.
Yes, that's exactly right. 14 years. Yeah.
That's stunning. And that's astounding.
Well, that'll give us, something more to sort of to hold on to and think about. Almost all of those are private sector jobs, not surprisingly. That's where this has been hit. That's where the closures have been focused and in the sort of consumer-facing space. So if you look just at the private sector, close to 400,000 jobs. There's 1.6 million people with payroll jobs in the private sector. So that number of around 400,000, we're looking at essentially a loss of one in four private sector jobs right now.
Now, listen, I know you're an economist, and I'm not looking for you to suddenly, in the blink of an eye, become a political analyst. But I have to ask you, given, and I want to come back to the subjects that we're talking about here, but I have to ask you, your sense of this ongoing morning news briefing delivered by the Prime Minister with yet another program to approach another destroyed segment of the BC economy, the national economy, people whose jobs have been lost. What's your sense of what the government has been doing?
My sense is they have to do something just because of the magnitude. We talked about the numbers. I mean, that they're so overwhelming. I think that we can look at what governments across the country have done, and I would characterize their efforts as reasonably good. The big challenge, of course, is rolling these programs out in time. We're talking millions and millions and billions of dollars and hundreds of thousands of businesses and millions of people applying. So just processing the sheer numbers is massive. The federal wage subsidy program in particular, saying we're talking about jobs, I think it's going to help retain employment. It's
gonna when you talk about that, you're referring to the 75-25 split.
Yes. Thank you. The 75% from the subsidy that the federal government is going to offer businesses to keep them going, kind of make them as whole as possible in the interim while things reopen. That is a definitely a positive step. That will help businesses, but it's not going to help keep all businesses open. Businesses face a host of other costs, fixed costs. They got to pay rent and everything. And in a lot of ways, these programs are just postponing the inevitable for some businesses, unfortunately. When it does come time to pay these bills and pay employees on their own, they may not survive. That is yet to be seen. But the flip side of that, of course, is the programs are helping. So I think it's such a dramatic move. Governments just are doing what they can, and it's just very problematic getting things out orderly fashion.
No kidding. British Columbia is viewed as the larger overall, but the really reality is there are regional economies, and where Vancouver is in panic mode because of the cruise ship industry, and in panic mode because of a tourism industry. You want to see panic, and you want to get a feel of a flutter in the gut of your stomach. Regional area, the Okanagan Valley, that is so dependent upon tourism.
Sure.
Washington, Oregon, Alberta, that were our prime destinations that would come flooding across the border, across the Rockies. We're just not sure what's going to be happening this summer.
No, it's very, very uncertain. And the tourism industry, which you just referenced, has really, really been hard hit. If you look at the job numbers, the accommodation and food industry accounts for about a quarter of those overall declines, actually a little bit more, so more than 100,000 jobs. Those are some of the jobs where I was mentioning a moment ago where I think you will see a little bit of a rebound. Now, I use that word advisedly or cautiously, because there is definitely going to be some rebound as we start to see retail stores reopen and some restaurants. But it's very difficult to know just how substantial that rebound will be, because I don't think you're going to see all employees rehired, and the reopening is going to be slow. And we've got the issue of consumer confidence. Are they going to be, consumers going to be kind of rushing back out to stores and restaurants? Are they going to take a more tentative approach? And then we also have the issue that many, many households have been very, very significantly impacted from a financial perspective. So they're going to be kind of maybe trying to rebuild some savings, pay down some debts and some bills. So that will weigh on a sort of consumer spending space as well. And I think a lot of those factors speak to a sort of a slower recovery. We're going to get a rebound and a jump in jobs, not back to where we were, and then we're going to kind of have this slower recovery, is my sense.
Yeah, what the new normal will look like is anybody's guess thus far. Listen, as you look at numbers and as jobs were lost across the province, was this a demographic story as well? Are the job losses unequal given demographics and age?
Sure. Yeah. No. That's a great question, and that's something actually we're trying to draw policymakers' attention to. Is if you do look across the demographic spectrum, I guess perhaps unsurprisingly, the younger cohort is hardest hit. So that's workers between the ages of 15 to 24, seeing employment soar up in that group, and really, really have been hard hit. And perhaps the best way I can convey that or think about it is, they too have seen 1 in 4 jobs disappear for that age group. So 25% reduction in the number of people employed in that age category. And I was making reference to years of job growth disappearing or being destroyed a moment ago. In the case of 15 to 24-year-olds, if you go all the way back to 1976, where we currently sit for that 15 to 24-year-old age cohort is not even on record. So it's lower than 1976 And if I had to take a guess, I'd say maybe back, we're at employment levels back to maybe the mid-60s, perhaps. It's just, it's the lowest level on record for Statistics Canada's labor force survey. So huge, huge hole in the employment picture for that age group.
I'm struck.
Yeah.
By the words that are coming from your mouth and the painting of the picture or the bracketing of age, demographic, and moments in time. You're talking about the 60s. It has not been this bad since the 60s.
For that age group, yes. It really is jaw-dropping. They really are jaw-dropping numbers.
No kidding. Mr. Peacock, this I did not realize how deep that you could go swimming in the pond of financial disaster. But I really appreciate. I'm going to contact your people and get you to come back in a larger window of time because I'd
be pleased to.
I would love to spend a little more time with you, going to some of the segments and some of the brackets. In the meantime,
yeah, and just that would be great. I'd love to. Government policymakers really have to turn our attention to this. I think just fight for every job. Get as many back as possible, and then recognize they're not all coming back, but what can we do to build and expand companies and attract investment so we can see job growth perhaps be quicker rather than a slower alternative.
I need to ask you very quickly as we say goodbye, is your report online?
We're just going to be posting, we did about a fairly short analysis of the employment. I guess it will be online, should be up within a couple hours, the sort of final edited version.
Ken Peacock, such a pleasure for all the wrong reasons to meet you this morning. And I want to thank you for your time over the breakfast table. Ken Peacock, chief economist with the BC Business Council. We are definitely going to have him back again.
This has been the Early Edition Podcast. Catch the Early Edition from 6 to 9 a.m. on AM 1150 and online at am1150.ca.